This is Greater LA. I'm Steve Chiotakis. It's KCRW's show that connects you to the people and the places of Southern California. This is a region, of course, of extreme poverty and extreme wealth. And today, you're getting a peek at the wealth through the window of real estate. I'm in a high-fidelity first-class traveling sector. Over the past year, KCRW has followed the work of a few local developers who build modern-day palaces. They're counting on the world's billionaires to pay tens or even hundreds of millions of dollars for these enormous mansions with amenities such as bowling alleys, hair salons, nightclubs. But even with all that wealth sloshing around the upper 0.1%, it looks like the people building these so-called giga mansions might have overestimated the demand. KCRW's Anna Scott has been checking in on the business of Giga Mansions, and she's here with me right now. Hi, Anna.
Hi.
How many of these so-called Giga Mansions are there?
Well, I should first say that there is no strict definition of Giga Mansion, but I've been looking at properties that cost $30 million or more, just as a loose guideline. So I checked with the real estate firm Coldwell Banker in Beverly Hills, and they told me they have roughly 45 listings in this bracket. The other thing that's important to mention is that some of these are older properties. Like the original Giga Mansion was probably the Spelling Manor, which, you know, the TV producer Aaron Spelling had built in the 1980s.
Father of Tori, yeah.
Exactly. Took the words right out of my mouth. But some of these are new, and that's where KCRW has been following this. There are a few developers who are really taking a gamble on this piece of the market, and they're building these enormous properties from the ground up with some success, but it looks like now things might be slowing down.
All right, so who are these developers doing this?
Well, one of them is named Niall Niami, and I went to one of his houses recently. It's in the hills of Beverly Hills on a cul-de-sac street, and I got a tour from a real estate agent named Rainey Williams.
When you walk in, so you have that beautiful foyer that flows into the living room, a fireplace separating the living room to the dining room. You have the hot tub built into the pool, and then you also have a toilet. So if you continue on to the kitchen here, you're going to pass a powder room to the right, and then the kitchen.
So I want to just set the scene for you here. So this house is about 20,000 square feet. Very large. The developer calls it Opus. A lot of these properties have names. That's one of the hallmarks of Giga Mansions. You walk in, and you have your living room, your sitting area, your kitchen, and a lot of it is surrounded by these retractable glass walls that, with the press of a button, recede into these marble sections of wall. So you have this entirely open area that opens onto a patio with a long, skinny infinity-edge pool and a view of the whole city. Okay, you know, these are typical things that you would expect to find in an incredibly expensive house. But Giga Mansions also tend to have very over-the-top amenities, or the newer ones anyway, stuff that nobody needs. For example, right off the kitchen of this particular house, there's a room that's about the size of a walk-in closet. Mm-hmm. It is a champagne room.
Those are all magnums of Cristal. And then the ceiling height really requires that gold ladder that's in there. You really need that.
Gold ladder.
Yes, there's a gold ladder so you can get to the higher bottles of Cristal in the champagne room. This house actually comes with a lot of alcohol, Steve. It's worth noting. And then the house has the second level doesn't go up, it goes down. So there's a basement level instead of an upstairs. And downstairs, you'll find a second pool, an indoor pool, a wellness center, which includes a gym and a mini hair salon, and also a giant fish tank.
It's a Cristal aquarium.
But no fish, because the developer, Niall Niami, does not like them.
Because he thinks fish smell. I really just don't think he's really one with fish. I think,
but he does like aquariums.
But he loves aquarium. He loves water.
Yeah.
Okay. Now this is your massage room. So very peaceful.
Of course, there's a massage room. Cristal aquariums. These houses aren't selling though. How long has this one been on the market?
Yeah, this one's been on the market for more than 2 years. And when it originally hit the market, it was priced at $100 million. Now it's just under $60 million. So I asked the developer, Niall Niami, about this.
When this house was first finished, you know, it was a different world of the marketplace. We had that house next door. It sold for $70 million. And at the time, you know, we had offers for more than we're asking now. But that's the only reason we have this house now. is because I priced it too high. So it is what it is.
So what he was talking about there was a few years ago, the house right next door sold for $70 million to the creator of the video game Minecraft.
Oh, okay.
He's a billionaire.
Yeah.
There were some other big sales, and it kind of created this frenzy around these ultra-luxury properties. But Niall Naomi is not the only guy building these who might have overestimated the demand. There's a few of these developers, and about a year ago, they all got a lot of attention for having projects on the market at the same time, but they're all still on the market. And they've seen big price reductions. The guy who built the $70 million mansion next door, he has another project that was originally priced at $250 million.
Wow.
It's still for sale, but it's been marked down to just a mere $150 million.
So do these developers, Anna, do they like throw a dart at the wall and they're like, hey, I'll sell this for $100 million? I mean, it seems like it's really arbitrary. Do they think that they're really going to get that much money for these places?
Yeah. Well, sometimes these giant price tags are definitely part of their marketing strategy. If they come out and say, hey, I've got a $100 million house, I've got a $250 million house, they know they're going to get attention and it may or may not sell for that much. And I actually talked about this very phenomenon with a man named David Kramer. He's an executive vice president at Hilton and Highland in Beverly Hills, a brokerage that handles a lot of these ultra luxury properties. And he says, you never know what you're going to get with one of these, but sometimes
you'll come out with a price that'll make a splash and it gets attention worldwide. And quite frankly, it benefits the news organizations who get to say a billion or half a billion dollar home as much as it does a developer. And I don't know that there is a real expectation that it's going to sell for that price. And you do see reductions after a while.
And you look at the real estate market in Los Angeles and all these places are, you know, I mean, obviously moderately priced homes are going for over asking price. That's what you hear about.
Yeah, it's almost kind of like the opposite of what we think of as the normal housing market in a way. In the normal housing market, sometimes things are underpriced on purpose because it'll start a bidding war. And with this stuff, they put a huge price tag on it. And most of the time, they're not getting that much. But they are still getting a lot of money in a lot of cases. So we should make that clear. I mean, just last week, a brand new mansion in Bel Air sold for $45 million. So I don't mean to paint a picture that there's not just an unbelievable amount of money changing hands with certain properties in Los Angeles.
So who's buying these homes at this level? What kinds of people are buying a $45 million home?
Well, property records are public, so I can tell you exactly who's bought some of these most expensive homes in the past few years. The $45 million one that I just mentioned went to a Saudi buyer. Some other buyers in past few years of these high-priced homes are Jeff Green. He's a billionaire based in Florida who actually made a lot of his money betting against the housing market.
Betting against the housing market.
You know the book, The Big Short, and the
yes.
movie? So he's not one of the guys in the books, but he's like one of those guys that bet against the housing market before the crash and made a lot of money. You've got Bruce Karsh. He's a billionaire investor. He's the co-founder of Oaktree Capital Management, which is based here in LA. He bought one of these properties. Jaime Helinski, he's a Colombian banker and real estate developer who's mostly based in London. In short, these are people of enormous wealth with multiple properties around the country, even around the world. So they're not necessarily looking for a primary residence.
Or like a domicile, right? Like someplace that they're going to plant themselves for years.
Not necessarily. I mean, I don't know for sure, of course, yeah. But they have more than one property.
When you look at these homes and how much they're selling for, and I can't help, because we're having this discussion about these giga mansions, think of the inequality here. Like how ridiculous this sounds, especially in a place that has such a problem with homelessness, such a housing, well, so many politicians saying there's a housing shortage. It is really hard to hear about this incredible wealth and not think about all of the people sleeping on the streets.
Yeah. As you said at the very beginning, Los Angeles is definitely a place of extremes when it comes to income, for sure. And you're right. It's hard to step into this world and not think about the other end of the spectrum. And it's also true that the very rich are building these bigger and bigger houses because they have more money than ever before, because we do have this widening inequality. But it isn't just billionaires who are getting bigger and bigger houses. I spoke to a man named Robert Frank, who's an economics professor at Cornell University. He's written many books. And his next book actually has a section on these giga mansions of Los Angeles. And he says that they can set off something that he calls a spending cascade. So it begins with these people at the very tippy top. They get these giga mansions, But then the people who socialize with them see that and feel pressure to upgrade themselves.
So people gather and they see that their peers have a house with a ballroom that can accommodate a large orchestra and hundreds of guests. Now we need a house like that. So they build bigger. And one step at a time, it cascades all the way down the earnings ladder.
So this is like Keeping Up with the Joneses, right?
Pretty much, yeah. And Robert Frank says that the median house size in this country today is 50% bigger than it was in the 1980s.
50%,
and he blames it on this phenomenon.
So where does this end, Anna? I mean, have we finally reached this uppermost limit of how, I don't know, how big and extravagant and opulent these houses can get, at least here in L.A.? I mean, given that a lot of these homes are not selling. I mean, they've been on the market and they're not, nobody's gobbling them up.
Yeah, well, if you want to know exactly how big houses can get, the developer we heard from earlier, Niall Niami, has one that's supposed to be finished this summer in Bel Air that he calls The One. This is kind of the mother of all giga mansions.
Really?
And it hasn't officially hit the market yet because it's not quite finished. But this house is about 100,000 square feet.
Wow.
It has 20 bedrooms, a bowling alley. It comes with art. It has a jellyfish room. This is a room where the ceilings and the walls are made of jellyfish tanks. I mean, no one needs this house. This is ultimate giga mansion. He has said that he is going to price this house at $500 million.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, no house in Los Angeles has ever sold for even close to that. But Niami argues that he will get top dollar for this one.
The One is a totally different animal. I think it's an easier sell than any house in L.A. because you can never build it again.
So he said you can never build it again because since he started construction on this, the city has actually changed some rules. So it is not possible to build something that huge anymore. So he thinks the uniqueness of it will be a selling point. But when I asked him if this house was still going to be priced at $500 million, listen to what he said.
The number's out there. So, I mean, I don't think we're going to change that. But I think that obviously we'll listen to offers when they come in.
So
the number's
off,
out there.
Yeah, backing off that a little bit. Another interesting thing is that he is looking outside of the billionaire buyer pool on this. He said that he's now planning to market this house, the one, to Fortune 500 companies as a possible corporate retreat destination.
Oh, like to send employees.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, for guys like Niami, they have to think creatively about what they're going to do with these properties, how they're going to market them, because for them, the giga mansion sector is a business, and it's a risky one. Niall Niami got a ton of attention for this $500 million listing, but it's easy to forget this is an enormous business gamble, and public records show that he bought the land where that property is for $28 million. He's taken out more than $80 million in loans on it, so he's already looking at having to break sales records in terms of price just to break even on this project, and I think he's looking to do more than break even.
KCRW's Anna Scott reporting on the Giga Mansions. Anna, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, if you're like me, there is no infinity pool or champagne room or crystal aquarium in your future home. It is hard enough just to pay the average rent here in L.A. Jenna Chandler is the editor over at Curbed L.A., and she joins us right now. Hi, Jenna.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. You and your team run this regular series called Curbed Comparisons, where you explore what you can rent, what you can buy for a specific dollar amount in various neighborhoods around L.A. I want to talk about a few. What can $2,000 a month get you right now in Los Angeles?
Yeah, so you could get a one-bedroom in a duplex in Arlington Heights. That's a neighborhood in around Washington and Western. Kind of small, but you could get stainless steel appliances and hardwood floors.
Okay.
Over in the Valley Village, you know, traditionally in the Valley, the saying goes, you can get more bang for your buck. So over in Valley Village, you could get a two-bedroom, one-bathroom apartment.
Maybe a
or
pool.
Or you could, if you want, hopefully if you're in the Valley, there's a pool. In South Pass, you could get a one bedroom with a fireplace and two wall-mounted air conditioners and a ceiling fan, which would come in handy in Pasadena. In downtown, you could get a 470 square foot loft small but has some character, brick walls and hardwood floors.
So what if you're making closer to minimum wage? What if you're making, you know, $12, $15 an hour? Maybe you can manage only $1,000 a month. What can you get for $1,000 a month?
Not much. We don't, I can't remember the last time we did a curbed comparisons for $1,000 a month. I think the lowest we've been in the last couple of months is about $1,500 a month.
$1,500 is it? So you probably can't find a place to live by yourself for $1,000 a month.
You could probably get a studio out in the valley, I would imagine.
What about for $1,500?
For $1,500, you could get a studio in Los Feliz, 500 square feet. You could get a studio in Fairfax, a studio in the Hollywood Hills. You could get a one-bedroom apartment in Glendale. You could get a one-bedroom in Hollywood, maybe around Cahuenga and Fountain.
What if I'm looking to buy? Because I know you guys do houses, too, like you could get for so much money. And I know this is a stretch, Jenna, under $600,000.
Yeah, it's a stretch, but that's a little bit above the median price in L.A. County. We did $550,000 recently and found some decent options. We found a 1920s home in Tahunga. It was about 1,000 square feet on an approximately 8,000 square foot lot. It had a stone fireplace and French doors and built-ins, and it had two bedrooms and one bathroom. We found a condo off the Sunset Strip in West Hollywood, measuring about 670 square feet, a waterfront condo in Long Beach for that same price. Or maybe, again, out in the valley, another single-family home in Granada Hills, built in the 1950s on a 7,000-square-foot lot. That one was listed for $559,000. Or over in Glendale, you could get a condo in a 1980s courtyard complex. This one came with a fireplace and had in-unit laundry and a private balcony, and about 1,200 square feet of space, and two bedrooms and two bathrooms for $554,000.
So we're talking about these homes, and those are on the lower end of the spectrum, Jenna. And my friends in Middle America would be rolling their eyes hard right now.
Yeah, they would.
All right, Jenna Chandler, editor over at Curbed LA. Jenna, thanks.
Thank you.
So what are your housing options? How much can you afford for rent or maybe a mortgage? Why don't you tweet at me, at Radio Chio, and hashtag Greater LA. I'd love to hear your thoughts about it. Coming up, homelessness knows no boundaries, and affluent Orange County city leaders look for a temporary fix, but residents have other things in mind, too. That's next on Greater LA.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
You're back with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. In the beach town of San Clemente, at the southern tip of Orange County, a packed city council meeting about what to do about the local homeless population overflowed council chambers.
Once again, if I could get your attention again, I'm going to ask for volunteers. We are going to get the occupancy of this room by the fire code down to 110.
Show me the law that says that.
And the city council had prepared an urgency ordinance opening up a city maintenance yard near the Metrolink station to homeless people who need a place to pitch their tents. Well, a lot of local citizens came out to express concern about homeless camping by the beach and to comment on that ordinance.
We should do the minimum necessary to create a temporary shelter that doesn't last forever.
But you have to imagine, you know, this is our life. This is so much our lives here.
And, I did speak to my twin brother yesterday, and he's homeless down south end of town. I hadn't spoken to him for 8 months. And I brought up these points, too, and I said, you know, would you use this, and would some of your buddies down there, you know, use it? He said, no, we're not going to use it. So it's kind of window dressing.
And if we keep saying, oh, the homeless are druggies, and they're going to set fires, and, you know, no. You have to put trust in them, and if they have a place where they can...
Folks, please. Every speaker is entitled to their 3 minutes, whether we agree or disagree.
And the next thing I was going to say about North Beach is I request a daily city cleaning or bleaching of the area, but it feels like...
Gustavo Arellano has been following this story for months. He's here now with KCRW's Orange County Line. Hey, Gustavo.
Hola, Steve.
Urgency sounds urgent. So why did the San Clemente City Council pass this ordinance?
They're struggling with the same thing that South County cities have been struggling with for the past 2 years of this homelessness crisis in Orange County, namely that they have homeless and law does not allow them to push them out of the city. So instead, they're going to try to make their lives as hard as possible. So their idea is, OK, let's put them in a half acre maintenance yard where no one can see them. So we could pretend that San Clemente is immaculately free of homeless to our tourists and all the residents there.
All right. So what do the lawyers for the homeless who are suing, what do they base their lawsuit on?
The fact that there are no homeless shelters, and there is a federal law actually that says that homeless people can camp on public property if there is not enough beds for homeless people. And so that's what these lawyers have been saying for the past 2 years. And it's interesting because the Voice of OC did an article. Two of those two lawyers, Brooke Weitzman and I forget the other lady's name, they were there and they were being heckled by residents in San Clemente because they were speaking up for the homelessness and saying, hey, you know, you should treat these people with dignity. And Brooke actually said, I have never seen such animosity towards homeless people the way I'm seeing in San Clemente, and I would argue in the rest of Orange, South Orange County, from Irvine down south.
Well, let's talk about that, because you and I have gone back and forth for the course of months and months, right, about this issue of homelessness in Orange County. On Friday, San Clemente, San Juan Capistrano, Elisa Viejo, filed a motion to get this judge, David O. Carter, who's been at the center of this, right, removed from another homeless lawsuit, which says these anti-camping ordinances criminalize homeless people. Why are they trying to get Judge Carter removed?
It's such a South County thing to do. Of course, South County being code for wealthier, whiter South Orange County, they're saying that Judge Carter, who's a federal judge in the U.S. District Court, he has become an advocate for the homeless. And his advocacy has essentially been calling out South County. Let's not forget, for decades, South County cities, their police departments would get any homeless folks in their cities and dump them in Santa Ana. Judge Carter specifically called that out from the bench last year. And he has gone on walking down the Santa on a river trail and talking to homeless folks and saying, hey, what do you folks need? What can we do? And going to these cities and say, you have to do something fast or there's going to be repercussions to pay. But now for these South County cities, like, no, you're basically a Catholic worker, so you cannot be impartial in this case.
Well, let's talk about some of those homeless folks who were camped out at North Beach, Gustavo, because are they happy about this move from the beach to the maintenance yard?
Yes and no, because there's going to be security there. They're going to be able to put their possessions away, and they don't have to deal with what happens usually with homelessness out in the public, which is, you know, it's not a pretty place to be at. But at the same time, they could feel the wrath of these middle-class residents in South County and beyond, where, you know, as that happened, people were cursing at them, according to the Voice of OC. People were yelling at them. That's no matter how you feel about the homeless situation, these people, a lot of times, people forget these people are humans as well, and that's really the way you're going to treat these folks. And so for these homeless folks, in some ways, they'd rather be at this temporary homeless shelter where there's no shade, in a way, to stay away from the rest of San Clemente.
Temporary, though, meaning the clock is ticking.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And then after that, then what? And this goes back to the fundamental problem that South County has with homelessness in their area. They don't want it, and they want to pretend that they're immune from the ravages of homelessness in Orange County. They want to just dump it all in Santa Ana, Huntington Beach, Fullerton, and basically the rest of Orange County.
Gustavo Arellano with the LA Times, and he joins us every week with KCRW's Orange County Line. Gustavo, thank you.
Gracias.
Tomorrow, tens of thousands of Angelenos live with HIV. Still big hurdles, big stigma. Coming up next on KCRW, it's DNA, design, and architecture. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for your ears. Have a great day. Let's do it again tomorrow.